Everybody has a story, and everyone's story matters. I truly believe that there are few things in life that are more powerful and important than us sharing our stories with the world. Here on Talk That Talk podcast, that is exactly what we're all about. Tune in each week to hear the story of my guest, myself, or honestly, something else entirely. My hope is that you will listen and leave feeling encouraged and that you know that your story matters. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Talk That Talk podcast. Today, we're going to talk about something very exciting, something that a lot of Christians like to talk about, which is the Enneagram, which is a personality test for those of you who don't know what the Enneagram is. And in the Christian circle, we like to talk about it a lot, for good reason though. It is a personality test. It's comprised of 9 different types and you try to figure out which type you are. And so this is the beginning of a series that I will hopefully finish on the 9 different types of the Enneagram, speaking with someone who identifies as each one of the 9 types. And we are kicking it off today with the type 1, which is called the reformer or the perfectionist, I think is the other name for it. And I have Stacy here with me. Say hello to everyone, Stacy.
Hello, everybody.
All of my 20 listeners, my faithful friends. So yeah, today we're going to talk about what it's like being a type 1, what is a type 1, and learn about how that points us to Jesus and the gospel. And yeah, we'll talk about different resources that you can use to figure out your type if you're interested in learning more about it. So let's get into it. So first, Stacy, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? Where are you at in your life currently?
I am a senior at IUP. I'm studying marketing and interior design. I'm from the better side of the state, Eastern Pennsylvania.
Yikes.
from Allentown, which is also the 3rd largest city in Pennsylvania, and nobody knows that.
So really?
Yes. It goes Philly, Pittsburgh, Allentown.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Billy Joel wrote a song about us.
Yes. I do know that. Yeah. Big Billy Joel fan. So.
Yes. But yeah, I'm getting ready to graduate. I have no idea what I'm going to do in 2 months, but that's okay. Yeah, I love to design and create and play sports. I love volleyball. Spike ball. I love spike ball. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to know?
No, that's good. That's good. Good overview. So let's just talk a little bit about what the Enneagram is. We know it's a personality test. Where can others kind of find the test or start to figure out their type? What's the way that you figured out your type, I guess?
So I started listening to a podcast called On the Frontier with Ben Battaglia and Justin Ryder. It was not an official Young Life podcast at the time, but they were both on staff with Young Life and they did an episode on the Enneagram. So that was my winter break of my freshman year of college that I listened to that. And they went through what all the 9 types were, and so I listened and tried to figure out which one I was, and then I took some of the free tests online, and then I read the descriptions and figured out that I was a 1.
And you read the descriptions on the Enneagram?
Enneagram Institute. Yes.
Okay, yeah. So the official Enneagram website is called EnneagramInstitute.com, and I'll put that in the show notes in case you need to see it, because it is a weird word, but EnneagramInstitute.com, so you can read about the 9 types there. They also do have a test that you can take. It is $12, I believe, so you have to pay for it.
I didn't know it's that cheap. I probably would have done
that. Yeah, I did pay for it when I took it. I think I actually took it twice, to be honest, because I wasn't sure after the first time, so I think I paid for it twice. but yeah, it's only $12. It takes about 40 minutes to take the test, and yeah, gives you a lot of info after, and it breaks down kind of where you rank in all the different 9 types. So that's one cool thing about the Enneagram is that we all have some of each type in us. We're not just solely our number, but our personality type, our dominant personality type is the number or the type that is the most, I don't know.
And I think that's because, like, it really comes down to the key motivation of why you do the things you do are different in each of the 9 types, but what that looks like is going to have a lot of overlap. So, like, if a 6 is worried a lot, we're all worried a lot, but they might be worried for a different reason than I'm worried.
Right, right. Yeah, and even just the difference between worry and anxiety, that's something I feel like I've been learning about recently. I worry about things, but I have friends who have crippling anxiety, mm-hmm. and it's different. So, yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people, when they first take a test, they may definitely find out their type right then and there, but I at least had to do kind of some digging. I was mistyped at first, and so it's totally normal if you kind of have to read and figure. Only you can decide what your type is, I guess. So even if you take a test and you're like, that doesn't really feel like me, that's okay. I think a lot of people have that experience.
Or you think you're a certain type for like a year and then you have a crisis that you're a different type.
Yeah, and I will say too, I think they note this somewhere, maybe on the Enneagram Institute, but women especially a lot of times are mistyped as twos because the two is the helper. And I think women are just kind of more taught to fit that kind of role. Mm-hmm. So if you're a woman and you get a two, maybe just double check. I also think a lot of Christians like to get twos too. Yeah.
Twos seem like the best one, honestly. Yeah.
They seem so selfless. They are awesome.
Yeah,
they are awesome. I know. I have a lot of friends who are twos, and I'm like, you are really great. And then that's what I thought I was at first. I thought I was a two, and now I'm like, oh my gosh, why did you think you were not a two? But yeah, I think that's one that a lot of people liked. It seems like they're just the best all around kind of category. So let's talk about what the type one is. So the type one, as I mentioned, is called the perfectionist or the reformer. I like the reformer personally better than the perfectionist, but they are known as the rational type. They are conscientious and ethical. They have a strong sense of right and wrong. They like to improve things, but they're really afraid of making a mistake. They're organized and they have really high standards. They like to think of, they know the difference between right and wrong. But the downside is they can slip into being overly critical and perfectionistic, even self-righteous at times. They typically have problems with resentment and impatience. But at their best, they are wise, discerning, realistic, and noble, and can be morally heroic. Also think ones are described as feeling like they have a higher purpose in life. They have a mission in life. They want to do something big and impactful. They want to make a difference. Yeah, they're very driven by their moral standards. They like to see change. They like to enact change for the greater good. And then another hallmark, I think, of being a type one is having a very self-critical voice in your head too. That's as much as you're critical of others at times and can be judgmental, you are probably 10 times harder on yourself. So
we can give some of the celebrity.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
Like those are helpful.
Yeah.
Examples.
We got some good ones. I say we, cause I am also a type one. So I'll be throwing that in there too.
The right one. Yeah. Okay. So Confucius, I'm not gonna read these all. So if you see ones that to pull out.
Plato. We got Sir Thomas More. He seems... Who is that guy? Is he a Christian person? I don't know who he is.
Nelson Mandela.
Oh, Holly.
Gandhi. Margaret Thatcher.
Okay. Hillary Clinton.
Oh, gosh. Osama bin Laden?
Osama bin Laden. Guys, we have Osama bin Laden, so...
Let's see. Maybe, Meryl Streep.
Okay.
I don't know how they figure out some of the actors.
Yeah, I don't either.
Like,
did all these people take... Julie Andrews, my girl. Tina Fey? Yo. Okay.
Michelle Obama?
Oh, wow. Okay, I think we can end it there. We also have, let's see.
I don't know a lot of these
Jane
people.
Fonda, big fan of her. I don't know who that Grace is. And Frankie? I mean, she was famous way before Grace and Frankie, but that's where I like her. Mary Poppins? SNL's The Church Lady? That's incredible.
Spock.
Prince Charles? We have a lot of political figures. We got Jimmy Carter,
because they want to make a difference.
Al Gore, Rudy Giuliani,
Hillary Clinton.
Yep, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Yeah. I have read that ones are sometimes more naturally good at politics, mm-hmm. because they like to convince others to agree with their
True.
Standards.
Yeah,
like if I think it's right, I'm going to try to convince you that it's also right and get you to be on my side.
Yeah, or even just convince people that there is a standard that we should all be living
at. Yeah. So we could talk about all these different things for literally hours and hours, but we'll just talk about some of the basic things that are typical in a type one. But first, let's talk more about, so you listen to a podcast about the nine different types, and you read about the descriptions. What really like made you come to the conclusion like, oh, I am a type one? Like what was the thing that, or things that really convinced you that that's who you were?
Yeah, I'm trying to think through, because when I did listen to the different type descriptions, I did think I could be a three or a six. Just the image conscious aspect of a three, of caring about what other people think about me, or having, you know, fear. But I think, and honestly, 3 years ago, I don't remember completely, but if I had to guess, reading through the one description, and like, I think you said this earlier, when you read through all the descriptions, there's a lot of things that are going to resonate with you.
Yeah.
But reading through the one, the majority of it resonated with me. And it probably was just the basic desire of wanting to feel good and right. And like, I was, even if, you know, something was hard or I didn't want to do it, or I wasn't pleasing everyone with the decision I was making, if I knew that I was in the right, that I was doing the right thing, that I was good, then it was easy for me to like, well, then I don't care what other people think. I don't care if this is harder. It's the right thing to do. Like, I always had that like strong, like ethical direction in school with like cheating and stuff like that. And you know, we'll get into the downsides of being like critical and judgmental of other people, but I definitely had that very like, you know, people be like, hey, like classes next period, I didn't do this homework, can I just copy yours? And like, it was really hard to like care what other people thought about me, and like,
and then also want to follow the rules at the same time.
Yeah, but I always was like, ah, I'm sorry, like she said we couldn't share answers, and like people probably hated me for that, but like I slept so much better that night knowing I did the right thing. That's so awesome. I think like knowing that that is the way I was, then reading the description, I was like, oh heck yes, yeah, like this is me,
that is who I am.
Yeah,
yeah. So, and I guess we should have done this before too, but I just want to read off the different names of the descriptions and just give a brief overview, since this is the first episode. So type one is the reformer, the rational idealistic type, principled, purposeful, self-controlled, and perfectionistic. Type two is the helper, as we mentioned before. They are the caring, interpersonal type, demonstrative, generous, people-pleasing, and possessive. Type three is the achiever, so that's what you thought you might be at first.
Yeah.
They are the success-oriented, pragmatic type, adaptive, excelling, driven, and image-conscious. Type four is the individualist. They are the sensitive, withdrawn type, expressive, dramatic, self-absorbed, and temperamental. Type 5 is the investigator, the intense, cerebral type, perceptive, innovative, secretive, and isolated. 6 is the loyalist, the committed, security-oriented type, engaging, responsible, anxious, and suspicious. Type 7 is the enthusiast, the busy, fun-loving type, spontaneous, versatile, distractible, and scattered. Type 8 is the challenger, the powerful, dominating type, self-confident, decisive, willful, and confrontational. And rounding out the list is type 9, the peacemaker, the easygoing, self, what is that word? Self-effacing?
Yeah, I don't know what it means, but that's how you say it.
I'm sorry. Yep, self-effacing type, receptive, reassuring, agreeable, and complacent. So that is a very brief overview of the different types, but just so you have some kind of context when we reference the other types in this episode, you kind of know what we're talking about.
I did think of one or two more things that convinced me that I was a one. Wanting to see things the best that they can be and always wanting things to be better.
Yeah.
Definitely resonated with me. I am a daydreamer through and through, hopeless romantic, just always like thinking of like the best case scenario, or this would be perfect, or if I could just rearrange my room, like growing up, I was always rearranging my room. But yeah, just constantly like daydreaming about just perfection. And so that also resonated with me of like, I want this to be the best it's going to be. And I want to help other people get there too. I want to encourage people. I want to show them what they're doing that's wrong and help them fix it.
Yeah.
Being a fixer, I think, resonated with me.
Yeah, it's so true. I feel like I always have a ideal scenario going on in my head of like, oh, it would be really great if I could have a house and this is what the house would look like and it would have this and I would have, you know, I'd be able to do this with it and I could, you know, yeah. Or it would be great if this is what my job could look like. Or, yeah, there's always some kind of, yeah, I never thought of myself as a daydreamer, really, but I do feel like I always have
an ideal scenario
going on.
And
I get
frustrated when life doesn't meet up to it.
I get really, really, like, discouraged sometimes, because I'm like, I'm so far away from the ideal scenario, but then I get, like, discouraged a lot of times, or frustrated.
Yeah,
like,
I think frustration, irritation is common with ones, because we know what, like, because some people genuinely, like, aren't able as easily to see what the best case scenario is, but a lot of times they're more content because
or they just don't care.
But I think because we are always aware of like what would be like the best case scenario, it leaves us like frustrated and irritated that it's not where it should be.
And not that they don't care, like, oh, they don't care about the good, but just it's not ruling there every day.
Yeah, yeah,
they're
exactly.
Like, they're not looking for the perfection in everything they see.
Yeah.
Whether it be their circumstance or other people or relationships or themselves, whatever it is. Yeah, that's very true. Okay, so let's talk about, some of those, like, hallmark things of the type 1. Their basic fear, type 1's basic fear is being corrupt, evil, or defective. Do you feel like you identify with that?
Yeah, I think how that was manifest in me, especially growing up, was always having a guilty conscience about something. Mm-hmm. Because if there was something that I did wrong and it wasn't, like, resolved or taken care of, I just felt like a bad person. Like, something was wrong. And so that would just, like, hang over me or weigh on me until, like, I talked to the person and resolved it or got justification that what I was doing was okay and not wrong. But, yeah, I definitely it's just consuming to feel like I did something wrong and it's not taken care of.
Yeah, that's – I definitely can relate to that, too. I feel like growing up I always felt – like, I was the bad kid, which in some ways I was, you know, but in a lot of ways I also was, I was really good in school, but yeah, I always felt like that was my identity. I was like the angry, bad kid, and I really wanted to be good, but I feel like I could never really get there. So, yeah, the guilty conscience thing is so real. And then, like you said about being justified, it's like sometimes if I'm doing something or there's something going on, I'm like, I kind of feel like maybe this could be bad. I don't necessarily maybe think that it is or feel that it is, but like it could have the potential to be viewed like that. So I need to run it past every other person in my life. And if all of them say that it's okay and it's good, then I can like, you know, breathe. But if one of them is like, then I'm like, then, you know, then I have to reevaluate everything. Yeah. So what about the basic desire? Their basic desire, which is kind of the opposite of the basic fear, is to be good, to have integrity, and to be balanced. How have you seen this play out in your life?
Yeah, I think it goes along with that a lot. But integrity has always been something that's been important to me. Like, even if others don't see it, behind closed doors, do I know that I'm doing the right thing? And, like, so that, you know, leads back to what I was saying about, like, even just, like, copying homework. Like, even if I knew there was no way that the teacher would find out, like, integrity was just so important to me because I would know that, like, I wouldn't be able to fall asleep that night and I would have to go, like, confess every sin to that teacher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that desire to just feel justified, which, like, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this later when we talk about, like, how this relates to the gospel and Jesus, but self-justification is a tendency of, like, it's a good desire to feel justified because we all are sinners and need to feel justified, but looking for that in and of itself and making that my ultimate, I don't know.
And looking for that in yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Is you're not going to find what you want to find 90% of the time, 95% of the time, because we are sinful, like you said. Yeah, so do you feel like that has gotten the integrity thing, Like, do you feel like you, because I'm just going to be real, I cheated on my homework in high school, like, but I didn't in college. There was a limit to my, it was like in high school, I was like, yeah, sure, I'll give you my homework or I'll copy off of you. Mm-hmm. But once I got to college, I was like, no, the stakes are high now, yeah, guys. Yeah, yeah. We could get kicked out for this. We are shutting this down. So, yeah, I feel like the rigidity, I feel like I maybe pick in different places,
yeah.
You know, like. There are maybe rules in other areas of my life that I would be more strict with myself than other ones, mm-hmm. I guess. But do you feel like that those, like, rigid rules for yourself have, like, gotten more lax over the years? Do they just look different, or you just know?
I think what you said is really true. I think it just looks different for each person. So, like, because a lot of times I'll do something and people will be like, you're one, like, how are you breaking that rule? Like, how are you okay with that? But, like, it really is just for whatever reason, what I decide is more important than other things. So, like, speed limit, I usually don't follow that. Sometimes if my friends are driving me around, like, I just don't use my seatbelt. That's terrible. I really should use my seatbelt. Like, that rule is there for a reason, for my safety.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, and I don't know if I feel that the only one I could harm is myself, then
ooh.
I'm okay with it. Or like my brother, who's also one, we were at the lake this summer with our family and he wanted to like swim to the other side or something. And one of my siblings is like, you know, like, I don't know if you're actually supposed to do that. Like boats could come, blah, blah, blah. And, like, how could you do that as a one? He's like, like, I'm fine.
It's
like, it's just me. Like, if I get hurt, that's my fault. Like, who is it really harming if I break this rule kind of thing? So I think we
unless you're the boat driver and you accidentally kill someone, and then they have to live with that for the rest of their life.
Yeah. And that's where each person thinks through it yeah. so differently.
Yeah.
That, like, for me, and maybe it's just because I had a fear of, like, having to ask for forgiveness and confess to people. So, like, to me, like, cheating on a test, like, I could see why that was a rule of, like, it makes things unfair. Like, that person, you know, would get ahead, but it wouldn't be fair. And so I would feel the need to confess that to someone.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So that's why I would avoid it, because I didn't want to confess to someone that I did something wrong. Whereas, like, swimming across the lake, you know, it's not like I have to tell anyone, like,
right.
Oh, I broke this rule kind
right,
of thing.
Right. Yeah, that is very interesting. I feel like if I think the rule is stupid,
yes,
yeah. I probably don't care.
Yes.
Or I won't.
If I don't see the reason for the rule.
Right.
Which I guess also isn't always true, because I see the reason for wearing seatbelts, but I still don't wear them sometimes.
But no, I think that makes sense. Like, if it's just going to hurt me.
Yeah. And I feel in control of the situation.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Okay, so what is the type 1 signature sin or struggle? So each type kind of has their, like, weakness or their sin. Sometimes people refer to it as their, like, their deadly sin or their struggle. The one is anger and resentment. And I think, kind of like you said, irritation, frustration, that's all a part of it. Criticalness, harshness. But boiled down to anger and resentment. Have you struggled with anger and resentment in your life? How so?
Yeah, I'm trying to think for the resentment part. Maybe if you talk about some stuff, it'll jog my memory. But to me, I think of resentment more of like holding grudges. Is that what you would?
Yeah. Yes, I think that's a part of it. But I think there's literal, like, smaller feelings of resentment. Like, if I'm in my relationships, I notice this about myself a lot. If I start to feel like I'm putting more effort into my relationships than the other person,
mm-hmm.
and the other person may just be going through something or may, you know, not be thinking about, like, oh, I haven't called Britt in 2 weeks, I should call her. Or, oh, I haven't asked her about this, I should ask her about it. Those are things I think about because I mm-hmm. want to make sure I'm, like, performing, you know?
Yeah.
But so if I start to feel like I'm putting in so much more effort, I care more about them than they care about me, I start to get resentful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily like I'm holding a grudge, because it's not like you wronged me in this
yeah.
really profound way. I'm going to hold a grudge for the
yeah.
rest of my life. But for this moment in time,
mm-hmm.
I'm feeling resentful towards you as my friend or my,
mm-hmm.
you know, sibling or parent, whoever it is, because I feel like we're not. And I'll get over it, but, mm-hmm. like, I have to deal with those feelings.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Because, yeah, like, initially, I don't really think about myself as someone holding long-term grudges. Like, to me, that's stupid. Like, just talk about it. I'm sure you can come to an understanding. But in, like, in those little things, I can let the feelings, because on the flip side of that, I'm more someone who can get really, really mad in the moment. Yeah. But then just give me 10 minutes to be off by myself, think about it logically, calm down, and then I will be willing to have a conversation about it. But I can still see those feelings of resentment of, like, it boils up, but, you know, if it's, like, a reoccurring thing, it's, like, I don't want to deal with this again. So I just push it down, and then that can build into resentment of, like, just kind of a complacency of, like, well, they're never going to change, like, whatever. But as far as anger, I definitely can get, like, blood boiling mad in the moment. And I definitely need to just walk away from situations in order to calm down, think about it logically. I found journaling is super helpful when I get really angry, to just process through what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking. And then once I have that time, I feel like most times 15 minutes later, I'm like, why was I even that upset about it? Like, I really do have a different perspective on it after I've processed through. But in the moment, like, I can get blood boiling angry about situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you feel like you, like you said, sometimes if you feel angry and you, like, push that down, do you then feel like you stay angry over longer periods of time, or have you never really felt like that?
I don't think so. I think when I'm, like, if it's in relationships and friendships, if I am away from the person for a while and I'm feeling upset about something, because I don't have that open communication with them, I create the person in my head. So it's easier for me to stay mad at someone. And it's the same thing over, like, people who on Facebook are, like, just, like, ripping people apart. Like, when you're not face-to-face with that person, it's so much easier to be resentful and mad and bitter. But I usually find that if I am feeling that way with a friend or whatever, when I can be in person and just talk through things, I'm like, they're human too. Like, right. Why am I mad at them? Like, right. We all have things we fail about. And so I think open communication and just really having heart to hearts with people almost always is like, okay, I'm good with you. If you're good with me, like, we're cool. Like, if I can have that open communication with someone, I'm not going to hold a grudge with them over a long period of time.
That makes sense. Yeah. I think that when I was younger, I was always angry. Like, my nana used to say that, she's like, when Andrew is hurt, like, he gets sad. When you're hurt, you get mad. And, like, my favorite word was annoying or annoyed. Like, I was always annoyed with people or something. And, yeah, I think part of the reason why it can get so out of control is because I think even now, as an adult, I still struggle with this. When I feel angry about something, I'm like, oh, no, that's bad. Being angry means I'm a bad person. I'm not nice. I'm not patient. I'm not compassionate. So, like, I need to not be angry, and then I don't really process my anger, and then I just get bitter and more angry, and then I can get very angry in the moment too, and be like, my mom used to say that my words could be, like, venomous. Like, I could be so mean, and I didn't like it. I mean, and I would think sometimes as a kid, when these things are coming out of my mouth, I'm like, why am I saying this? Why am I doing this? Like, why am I so mad and angry? Like, I don't want to be like this, but I feel like I don't know how to not be like this, kind of. Yeah. And I mean, that could be just based on different circumstances and growing up and different things. You know, not every one type one is the same person. But I also think that resentment can look like not just in relationships, but in life. Like, if you're bitter about your circumstance, or you're bitter about just things about yourself too, like frustrated with, like, ugh, I hate this thing about me. I can't change this thing about me. I keep trying. I keep, you know, whatever. Do you also feel like, as maybe an adult now too, when you feel angry with someone, there's this, I feel like I hear this voice sometimes, like, you need to forgive them because you are really bad too. And if you are mad at them, like, hello, like, look at yourself. Like, you need to forgive. You need to move on, because a bad person would hold a grudge. A good person would forgive them.
Yeah. I don't know if I explicitly, like, think through those exact thoughts. But I have I do feel like as I've gotten older, I've learned so much more about grace because I've learned, like, the older you get, you realize how broken and sinful you are. And so where it would be so much easier for me to point the finger at other people growing up, as I've gotten older, it's like, I am the worst, so I can give you grace kind of thing. But
yeah, some of that is definitely wisdom. I think it gets sticky when it's like, yeah, when your motivation is doing things, whether it's forgiving or doing anything out of a motive to feel better about yourself. Mm-hmm.
But I do think now thinking of it, not just in relationships of resentment, I do think I feel that resentment when it is about myself and why I'm still struggling with a certain sin and why I haven't grown in a certain area. I think that's when I can feel, and I think of resentment as like frustration of just like, why can't I resenting myself and just being like, well, then you're never going to change. You're not going to get better at this. And just kind of that bitterness of like, I can't do it. Like, I'm not going to change.
Yeah.
So I think resentment for myself, or even resentment with God of like, God, if you want me to be more like Christ, like, why have you not fixed this in my life? And then that concern, maybe that's a nine wing, but concern to complacency and like, well, whatever kind of attitude.
Like, I'm not going to change, so why try?
Yeah, yeah.
I like to call that the F it attitude.
Yeah.
I definitely get that at times.
Mm-hmm.
What about the, like, what do they call it? The voice in your, they don't call it the voice in
your
head.
Oh, the inner critic.
The inner critic. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So that's a thing that type ones experience, is the inner critic. Do you feel like, I mean, what's that like for you?
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of times.
Give us some examples, too.
Oh, gosh. Let me think.
The juicy details.
I'm so bad at thinking of specific, like, real life examples that have actually happened. I can think of, like, theoretical scenarios.
Yeah.
But, like.
Oh, that's fine.
But I think a lot of times in social situations, and I know, like, other types do this, too, and other people, but after I've had a conversation or something, of literally replaying and being like, oh my gosh, I said this.
Yes.
Like, they probably interpret it like that. Like, now I'm gonna feel guilty about that. And I just keep replaying in my head and be like, hey, like, remember when I said that? Like, I didn't mean it in that way. I just wanted you to know that. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
so
my gosh,
I feel like it's that constant, like, I think it's because I want to always feel, one of the descriptions was, you want to feel balanced. I want to feel like everything is in equilibrium as far as like being good. So if there's something that's like pricking in my head of like, yeah, but you did this and like, that wasn't the right thing. Then I'm like, okay. Yeah. I think that's where the inner critic comes up for me, of just constantly checking myself of like, is there anything you need to feel guilty about today?
Oh my,
it's like, why is that my gosh. Like, why don't other people think about that? Like, why do I have to always look for something to feel guilty about? And that's something that I think the Lord has groomed me in so much. Because when I was younger, it really did consume me. I remember, like, waking up some mornings. If I, like, told, like, a little, like, white lie to my parents, like, 2 weeks ago and never said anything, every morning for those 2 weeks, I'd wake up and just feel like a load of bricks was on my chest because I just felt so guilty. And like, when I was sleeping, it was my escape of like dreaming and whatever. And then I woke up, I was like, oh, remember when you told that white lie 2 weeks ago?
Remember how bad of a person you
are? Yeah, exactly.
Let's replay that in our
And so I think I've come a long way with that, of like realizing like who Jesus says I am and the fact that I am forgiven, justified by him. And it's like, yes, there are still things that we need to make right with people in our life, but it's not like the all-consuming guilt that it used to be for me.
I still feel like I fight against that every day and need help with that. Like, even if it's not like I said something, like a couple weeks ago I hung out with a couple friends of mine, and like after I left, I was like, I feel like I was just kind of like obnoxious, or like maybe I like said some things that like could come off this way, like it wasn't like explicitly like a bad thing to say, but I feel like I just had this, I don't know, like I wasn't on my game. You know, I wasn't like being super nice and pleasant and fun. Like, there was like a, so I, you know, I think about that, like that was maybe a month ago at this point. Just, you know, if I'm like, oh man, this person probably thinks, because I said this, they were thinking that, and I never want to feel misunderstood. Like, I never want people to...
Mm-hmm. Yes, the fear of being misunderstood is huge for me.
Yeah, yeah. That's so funny. Yeah, but I feel like, yeah, your brain just constantly scanning, like, all right, what have you done today? Mm-hmm. What have you thought today? What have you said today that we need to feel guilty about? And sometimes I think that that can cause, like, this intense feeling or need to escape. Mm-hmm. Like,
maybe that's why I daydream so much.
Yeah, I think that's why some people drink. Mm-hmm. I think that's why, I mean, I think that's part of why I used to drink. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of different things you can do. And I think, like, another thing that I recognize that I struggle with is being in silence. Because when I'm in silence, I have to be alone with my inner critic.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would rather just distract myself by listening to music or, watching TV or something. It's hard for me to really sit alone with my thoughts because that's right where they go to.
Yeah. It's like I can't be completely carefree unless I know all my T's are crossed and I's are dotted of, like, I'm good. Okay, now I can be carefree.
Haven't offended anyone today.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't made some horrible mistake, you know. Or, like, are you going about your day and then you're reminded of something you did when you were, like, 10? Or, like, you know, a freshman in high school and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Do I have to rehash that? Do I have to apologize for that again?
Yeah.
And you're like, I probably wasn't sorry enough at the time, so I probably have to go over it. Just, like, yeah, crazy. Yeah. So, yeah, the inner critic is a real person. And I also think I was reading this, and one of the things that the Enneagram people, like, suggest as a way to grow for type 1s is to learn to distinguish yourself from your inner critic.
Mm.
And that is something I would really like to work on.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a good idea of, like, when it's your inner critic talking versus when it's, like, yourself or God or...
Yeah, I don't think I've thought of it that much in that specific sense of myself or the inner critic, but I think I have prayed through of, like, is it my inner critic or is it the Holy Spirit? Because it's not like the Holy Spirit doesn't convict us, like, he does.
Yeah.
And so I think I've had to learn the difference between my inner critic just trying to make me feel guilty about something, or is it the Holy Spirit convicting me that I need to, like, confess of this and make things right with other people? And I think I have grown a lot in that. And it's hard to, like, put in words of what the difference feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just that the inner critic, and even just, like, let's be real, like, Satan, like, he wants to make us feel guilty. Like, that's why I love the verse, there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. And so he wants to make us feel condemned, and, like, our inner critic condemns us. So, like, Satan condemns us. And so I think sometimes the difference for me is, like, is this leading me to just feel guilty and bad for the sake of feeling guilty and bad? Or is it leading me to a place of repentance and restoration and redemption and forgiveness? Because the Holy Spirit convicts us in order to lead us to growth and redemption and restoration. Whereas inner critics and Satan and condemnation just makes us sit in this murky place of I'm awful just for the sake of feeling like that. So I think I've been able to discern, like, is this leading towards confession and restoration, or is this just an irrational,
right,
I'm the worst ever and nothing's ever going to change?
Yeah. And I think, too, like you said, restoration, reconciliation being the big thing in my head that stuck out. Like, will this, is the intent of this to bring me back in relationship with God, or is it to alienate me?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
is my feeling of, like, I can't, you know what I mean? And I don't know how you always discern that, but yeah, if it's, like, a nudging of, like, hey, we need to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ever feel like that, like, the Holy Spirit being like, hey, we need to, like, sit down and have a conference about this thing, kind of, or, like, you need to bring this to me. It's, like, an invitation back into relationship almost versus, like,
An alienation is a good way to put it. Because, yeah, I've felt that of, like, and, like, even with, I know we've talked about this before, of, like, you know, if I slip out of doing my quiet time, my inner critic and my guilty conscience then condemnation from the devil is telling me, like, well, just what's the point? Like, you've slipped so far, like, God doesn't even want you back. Okay, that's condemnation, because that's just going against the truth of the gospel. God does want me back. And so conviction would be, come back to me. I want to spend time with you again. Condemnation would be like, you've slipped so far. Just stay where you are. There's no point.
Yeah. Yeah, you're too far gone.
Yeah.
You're too bad, so yeah. Just don't try.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good way to think about it. It's like, with this, it's not that God's like, I'm just going to let you get off scot-free and not deal with, like, the things you're doing wrong, yeah. But is it an invitation back into a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of life-changing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about it that way. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good, my therapist and I have also talked about assigning some of, like, your inner critic thoughts to, like, a different person. So, like, I don't do it all the time, but, like, I sometimes like to think about my inner critic as, like, a really arrogant frat guy named Chet.
Or Brad.
Yeah, not Chad, or, like, just Chet. Like, you know, sorry, I'm sorry if your name is Chet out there. But Chet Marshall is his name. And, you know, he really likes to wear, like, Vineyard Vines and, like, plaid shorts and,
like, Sperry
polo
loafers.
Shirts. Yeah, Sperry's. And just
with no socks.
Always drinking, like, Natty Lights and just... Yeah, living off his parents' trust fund, and he's golfing a lot and just really disrespectful to women. Like, he's just the worst, you know? And, like, and he's the person that I think I would have the hardest time having compassion for. So I try to, like, sometimes assign, like, shut up, Chet. Like, it's just, that's not, you know, like, why would you say that? And sometimes it's helpful, but trying to distinguish, like, okay, I am not, like, my, you know, my inner critic's thoughts. Like, that's not who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes it's really hard, yeah, to separate yourself from that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sorry again if your name is Chet. Or if you're a frat guy. Not all frat guys are like that, but that's just the personality I had to come up with. All right, so let's talk a little bit about wings. So with a wing, I think most people have them, but I don't know that everyone has them. But your wing is... They're the two numbers that are beside your number. So for ones, we can be a wing 9 or a wing 2. If you're a 2, you could be a wing 1 or wing 3, that kind of thing. So it's the number below you or above you. And I think we pull from both sets of our wings, but there's one wing that usually is more predominant. So what is your wing?
I think I keep going back and forth, and I still have to figure out maybe which one is predominant, because I feel like I used to think it was a 9 that was predominant, but lately I feel like it's 2. And I do think I wing both.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everything, whatever, like, personality test I take, or introvert, extrovert, I'm always, like, so just, like, smack dab in the middle. Uh-huh. Like, for introvert, extrovert, I'm, like, last time I took it, at least, I was 51 extrovert, 49 introvert, but I actually think it's the opposite. I'm definitely more introvert. But anyway, I think... I am pretty equal, but lately I've felt that I am more of a 2 wing, because when I see something that's not the way that it should be, I really do want to get in there, get my hands dirty, and make it the way it should be, rather than just... But I also feel like I resonate with the 9 of, like, just kind of getting, like... I forget what the word is. I'll just use complacent of, like, this is the way it should be, but it's never going to be that way. So just whatever. Like, I do slip into that, but I think in more cases than not, I wing 2. And I think that's, like, I love to coach. Like, mm-hmm. I coach volleyball and track, and, like, I love it because I get to assess where the player is, see what they're doing wrong, and then fix it and make it better and do drills and do this and then see where they can end up. So, like, that, like, lights me up. Like, that is so cool. And so I definitely think I wing 2, because I want to see people transformed, and I'm willing to get in there and make it happen. I always thought I'd be an elementary school teacher when I was younger, because I just love teaching and helping, but I'm definitely not a 2. So that's why I think I wing 2.
Yeah. I just wanted to see if I could find, like, a good
description of what...
Yeah, description of what the different wings are.
I think they have, like, specific... names, right? Like, the one wing 2 is called the something advocate. The advocate, and the what's the one wing 9?
Let's see. Okay, Yes, the One Wing Two. Let's do the One Wing Nine first. So the one with a nine wing is called the Idealist. They are highly discerning, wise, and civilized. They can be, this is when they're healthy. They can be scholarly and I don't know that word, so I'm just going to skip it. Maintaining a dispassionate philosophical stance that focuses on long-range concerns, the big picture. They can have an introverted, reclusive quality about them, seeking relief from the maddening crowd, often in quiet, natural settings. They are emotionally reserved, but generous, kind, and considerate, generally loving nature, animals, and innocence wherever they find it. They wish to improve things, but with a gentler, more detached touch than other ones. When they're like at an average health level, they're less likely to engage in the politics and dirty work necessary to bring about the reforms they believe in. Average people of this subtype would rather explain their ideals than personally persuade others of their correctness. The anger seen in ones is harder to detect in a one with a nine wing than in the other, tending to express itself in stiffness, impatience, and sarcasm. People of this subtype prefer to be alone and look for situations where they can work by themselves in order to avoid dealing with the disappointing messiness of human relationships. They can be remote, otherworldly, and impersonal than the other subtype, potentially disdainful, elitist, and condescending to their fellow humans. So that's a one with a nine wing. The one with a two wing is called the Advocate. When they're healthy, people of this subtype blend their quest for ideals and higher principles with empathy and compassion for others. Less purely idealistic than the other subtype, they are genuinely interested in improving the lot of mankind and more willing to get into the trenches to bring about the changes they advocate, kind of like you were saying. They're also more overtly passionate and interpersonal, enjoying the give and take of political involvement. People of this subtype are persuasive and go out of their way to get others to care about the causes and beliefs they espouse. Sorry, all the grammar errors. When they're average, when they're at an average health level, they're highly active and outgoing. Average people of the subtype can be fairly aggressive and forceful in the pursuit of the ideals and reforms they seek. I'm a wing two for sure. While they are comfortable being alone and need a good deal of downtime to recharge and think, they are also energized by engaging with others, particularly debating and refining their ideas. This makes them naturally good at politics on whatever scale they engage in it. The need of others are the focus for their altruism, so long as they are feeling they are making a difference. They can become critical and irritable and highly vocal about their discontents when they are frustrated. They are also more fiery and action-oriented than the other subtype, and so the possibility of being frustrated by people and events is higher.
I think I'm a wing, too.
Me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fiery, I think.
I think excited by interacting with people. Because I think when I heard the nine of, like, they need to recharge and be introverted, I was like, oh, I do need that. But they mentioned that with the two as well. But they mentioned, like when we have conversations, you and I, especially because we are so similar, like, it, like, energizes me.
Me, too. Yeah.
But to be in, like, a huge group of people, sometimes that's a different story. But but even after conversations that excite me, I still need to just be by myself, process, recharge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And after conversations or events that energize me, like we've talked about this a couple of times, like I would say I'm more introverted too. I need to recharge alone, but get me around like a group of my friends and I love the attention on me. I love to be like, funny and like party, silly. And but then after that, I'll think like, oh, is that too much?
Exactly. Yes.
Like, was I being too obnoxious? Was I being too loud?
Because I get so like caught in the moment.
Yes.
Like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Like,
which is so funny because people don't think of ones like that.
Yeah. Like after our friend, when we went to Caleb's wedding, like for a couple weeks after, I was like, dang, I was like really in, like I was like all in my own world on the dance floor. Like I hope people weren't like, I hope I wasn't like too much, you know?
Yeah, I do the same thing.
So yeah, I definitely think it sounds like we're both more of this two wing. And I also think like just the name, the Advocate, I'm like, that's what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
I'll be the Advocate. And I think sometimes wing twos, when we think about being a good person or like being good, it means loving people well, or it means like being compassionate for other people.
Yeah, it's more relationally based.
Exactly. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So yeah, speaking about where ones go in health. So each type, when they are doing well and they're growing, they go to the good side of a different number when they are kind of struggling or going in a direction of unhealth. They go to the downside of a different number. So where do ones go when they're growing and doing well?
Growing and doing well would be the good parts of a seven, which sevens are the general enthusiasts. So more carefree and spontaneous and fun and just lighthearted. Because, yeah, I feel like people don't naturally think of ones as lighthearted. But when we are growing and even just in a stress-free environment, like for me, we just said this, but wedding receptions, like, oh my gosh, like, I just come alive. and I'm even thinking back, and it's just so funny because, again, like, this is just a tool, but what I find interesting is it puts words to, like, ways I've been my whole life.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being at one of my friend's birthday parties, like, in first grade, and we were just goofing off, being silly. It was a slumber party. And I just remember I was being so silly. I had a pillow in front of my face and I was just like, oh, look at me. I don't know where I'm going. And sure enough, I fall and I like smash my face on the piano bench. My teeth, I break my tooth. It starts bleeding. My mom has to pick me up. I get like emergency surgery on my tooth the next day.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, I just was so in my own world of like, yeah, like this is crazy.
Yeah.
But like, I never would have, as a first grader, been like, oh, it's because I was in my seven growth. But like, yeah. I've always been this way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just think that, and I think for me, college has really brought out my seventh growth. Just with the friends that I made right off the bat and I'm getting involved with Young Life, just the climate of the community caused me to do so many things that were outside my comfort zone and just more spontaneous and crazy. And I was like, well, are you sure we should be doing this? Or yeah. Like this, I don't know, like I'm scared, like blah, 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 like all this kind of stuff. But it has definitely given me more of a lighthearted, like, sure, let's go to a concert on a school night that's 4 hours away. Why not? Like, yeah. It's totally like, you know, where I still struggle with like, but it's a school night. Like, should we really be doing this? Blah, blah, blah. But it's definitely helped me of like, you know what? Life goes on. It's okay. So I think I've really, through college, been able to grow into that lighthearted, spontaneous side of myself.
Yeah. It's like kind of an ideal scenario for ones because you're doing something with a higher purpose. You feel like you're, you know, part of something bigger than yourself. You're accomplishing a mission, but then you also have the freedom to do like really fun,
yeah,
spontaneous things. And I also feel like sometimes I would not consider myself spontaneous, like in the least bit, but there are times where I'm like, I need a break from all my seriousness. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to not think about all the ideal scenarios or all the, like, mm-hmm. imperfections of life or, like, mm-hmm. how things need to be changed or these deep contemplative things. Like, I just want to not – yeah, I just want to be light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good – it's a good thing for the soul,
yeah,
for ones, when it's like, okay, I can just be silly and be myself and – take, yeah, a break, mm-hmm. from the serious work that I feel like I,
yeah,
have to be doing all the time. Exactly. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think along with that, something I've grown in and I'm still growing in is just letting go of like my expectations and my plans and being okay with the messiness of life. Because, yeah, I can have this set idea of like, this is how my day should go. This is how this year should go, blah, 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 blah. And when the unknown factors of different things come in, I'm like, no, but like, I'm just like grasping on for like, this is the way it should be, of just like, mm-hmm. learning like, life is messy, it doesn't go as planned. It will do me all the better to just learn to kind of like roll with the punches. Mm-hmm. And that goes along with being flexible and spontaneous of like, it's not going to be perfect. That's, yeah, I think that's the key of like learning, like, life is not perfect. And the sooner I realize that, the sooner I will not be setting myself, yeah, up for disappointment. Because, right, you're just constantly setting yourself up for disappointment, yeah, if you expect life to be perfect.
True. Yeah. Type A.
Yeah.
That's the old personality test.
Yeah, yeah. Type A or type B.
Type A, type B. Okay, so what about stress? Where do ones go in times of stress or unhealth?
That would be the four, which is the individualist, but the bad sides of being moody and self-absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is something I've been my whole life, but it just kind of put words to it once I read, yeah, what the Enneagram had to say about it. And that is just so true of me. Like, if I feel like, and even, and it annoys me about myself, because if I'm in a social situation and like something triggers me to be stressed, or someone says something that makes me shut down, I cannot hide my emotions. Like, people know that I am being moody and self-absorbed, because I just, like, it's that whole introvert side too of, like, I just instantly look inward. Like, if someone makes a little comment, there's always truth behind even joking comments. And so if someone makes a little comment that, like, makes me feel like, oh my gosh, that's how they really think about me, then, like, I'm just, my brain is just, like, mulling over.
Yeah, we're so spiraling.
Yes, I'm spiraling. And people know it. Shout out to Sarah Bricker, Sarah Weaver Bricker. She's a two. So very interpersonal, good at reading people. She is so good at reading my emotions. Like, in an instant, if something's said and, like, I'm, like, starting to do that spiraling of being moody and self-absorbed, she'll instantly be like, what are you thinking about? You did? And I'm like, how did you know? It's like, well, it's obvious, and my face shows it all.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But that doesn't, people don't always know what we're doing.
Yeah,
oh my gosh, I've always been told that I cannot hide how I feel. Like, you never have to guess how I'm feeling, because it's all over
my face. It's all
over
my face,
I cannot hide it. I cannot. Yeah. Pretend.
I wish I could, but it's like I'm paralyzed by whatever I'm like thinking about or spiraling about.
Yeah. So funny. Yeah, and the moodiness too, I think, is very and we go inward. That's a really good way to think about it too.
Get sassy in comments and stuff.
Ooh. Yeah. Yep. And I think that's when the anger can come out too. Mm-hmm. In very not nice ways.
Snippiness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely feel like in high school, I could be really mean to people who hurt me, or, like, I could destroy people with words or a look. And it's, like, there have been people who I've, like, literally had to apologize to that have, like, you know, I've, you know, seen since, or they got involved with Young Life years later or something, and I'd be like, hey, I'm really sorry about that one time that I, like, said this to you or whatever.
Yeah.
And not all ones are like that, but I definitely, feel like the moodiness and just not being able to control how you feel, and then sometimes what you say.
Yeah. Especially in the moment.
In the
for
moment.
Me. Like, for me, that was with my sister growing up, the one closest in age to me, because we shared a room literally until my freshman year of high school. So plenty of opportunities for fighting. And it's different than just, like, a friend, because you at least try and be somewhat on your good behavior for a friend, but not with family, which is sad. But we had so many, like, butting heads fights where, like, I would just say something so, like you said, venomous.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I'd just be like, oh my gosh, like, that's my sister. What is wrong with me? But it's like, it's my way of, like, blowing off the steam or venting in the moment, because I just have, like, this anger boiling up. And so I'm like, what will just really, like, stick it to them? And then 10 minutes later, I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I say that?
Yes. And then you have a lot of guilt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And have to make it right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really mean to my brother, my poor brother. Okay, so we kind of talked about what is it like being a type one day to day. Is there anything you wanted to add to that?
I think just if there's any other ones listening, journaling really has been super helpful for me on a day to day basis. Just being able to, whatever is going on in my head internally, put it on paper and process through just what I'm feeling, and just getting it, like, outside of my brain, and, like, just journaling my prayers. And also, I think it's cool because then years later, I can go back and read and be like, wow, like, I have grown. Like, God is working in me.
Yeah.
But just getting all my thoughts and emotions and all that on paper every single day has been really, really good for me.
Yeah, forcing yourself to process your emotions in a healthy way.
Yeah.
However you can do that. And I also think finding an outlet for your aggression or frustration is very important, too. Sports, that could be journaling. Yeah, for me, it's definitely working out.
Yeah.
I mean, and talking, too. I'm very much an external processor.
Yeah.
And it can get, you know, venting can turn unhealthy, but there are many times where I feel like I've been like, I just need to talk to someone about this mm-hmm. and be real about how I feel.
Yeah.
And I leave feeling like, oh, I got that out kind of thing. Got that off my chest. That's like one of my favorite things to say.
Oh, definitely. That my mom is, she's the best. I feel like I just remember in high school, like I would come again, like thinking back through every single part of your day, I would come home and I would just spill everything to her
yeah.
so that it got out of me and I'd feel a little less guilty and be like, so do you think I have to apologize to that person?
Yep.
She probably got so frustrated with me, but she was just to have that listening ear of like, I'm not the only one thinking through this right now.
Yes.
At least now it's on someone else to tell me if I need to do something about it kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, right. Because I think a lot of our focus is on ourselves. I mean, like, it's unfortunate.
Prideful.
But it is, we're constantly trying to change ourselves, evaluate ourselves, yeah. judge ourselves. Like, whatever, establish ourselves as good, earning, performing. It's all about like how we are doing.
Yeah.
And so to get outside of yourself, like I'm already processing in my head all day. I don't want to do it more than I already yeah. am. Like I want to do it with other people who I can hear their point of view from. But yeah. I think where I get in trouble with that is I still do need to process alone.
Yeah.
Like really process healthfully with the Lord.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I think something or I feel something and I'm like, I need to process this, but I don't want to do it alone because then I'm just mm-hmm. thinking about, you know, whatever, all the inner critic thoughts. So I process it out loud with other people, but then I don't do the work of still sitting down in silence with Jesus and like bringing it to him, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something I have to work on.
No, definitely. And I can find myself putting other people in the place of God of like,
yeah.
well, if my mom tells me that what I did was okay, then I don't have to worry about it. But it's like, no, like if this is genuinely something that is convicting me, I need to bring it before the Lord and see what he says about it because he's the ultimate judge and ultimate authority. So yeah, it's definitely true. Like we do like to process with other people, but ultimately at the end of the day, we need to be bringing it before the Lord and being honest with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think is the hardest thing about being a type 1?
It's a loaded question.
Or just for you?
Yeah, I think it can feel taxing.
Yeah.
Taxing. Like, it's tiring. Annoying. Tiring, yeah. To just constant. And that's why I think when we have those moments of, like, feeling like a 7 and like carefree and fun loving and spontaneous. It's like, this is awesome. Because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it can just be taxing to always be evaluating. Like,
yep.
am I good? Am I doing the right thing? Am I blah, blah, blah. It's just like, it's just tiring sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the best thing?
I really do love how much it makes me feel alive to be able to see where things are, see where they could be, and make that happen. Because, like, that's a reflection of being made in the image of God. Like, and I know we'll talk about it later, of how Jesus was, like, the perfect reformer. And so, obviously, we don't do it perfectly. However,
right.
like, when we are encouraging and reforming in step with the Holy Spirit, like, it still is going to make us feel alive because it's in the image of our Creator. And so I love just when I can, when someone comes to mind and I can send them a text of encouragement and to just see like, that just like made my day or that whatever. It's like, yes,
it made
like,
a difference.
It made a difference. Yeah. And so I really love that aspect of being one is like, I want to make things better. I want to make a difference. Like,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of passion that comes along with being
yeah.
a one that really, that's something I do really love about myself. And ultimately God is the one that gave it to me. And so I am really grateful for that character quality of like, and I can get frustrated with people who just seem like complacent of like, whatever. It's like, just get excited about something. Like, come on, are you alive? Are you living?
Yeah.
So I do really love, and I think like the Lord has given me the ability to, be a good communicator in certain settings. And like, because I have a fear of being misunderstood, I feel like
yep.
I am really good at thinking through, like, how is this going to be perceived? What is my goal? And how do I go about getting there? So it's like I'm able to communicate with people effectively and know how they're going to perceive it, know how to avoid that, and, like,
right.
really communicate in an effective way to accomplish a greater purpose. And, like,
right.
that excites me.
Yeah. Yes. That is very, very true. And like you said, I think before we were recording, like, I'm very much the same way. Like, when you like something, you don't just like it. You, yeah, like, freaking love it.
Yeah.
Like,
and want everyone else to love it, too.
Exactly. You tell everyone about it. Yeah. And then in the opposite sense, when you dislike something, a lot of times I hate it. I'm like, I don't just not like that. I hate that. Like, I feel everything very intensely.
Yes.
So, you know, sometimes that is like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how much I love this person, or I love my family, or I love this thing that I enjoy doing. Like, it's like overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. Like, sometimes I literally feel like that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I like really love you. You know, like, I'm like, I really, really care about you.
Yeah.
And then in other, you know, in other ways, it's like, I really hate this thing.
Yeah.
Or I really feel this disappointment or whatever it is. And
passionate
is a very good way to describe
which
that.
Which again can be good and bad.
Good and bad. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, even like in the little things, like playing volleyball, like going up and getting that hit, I'm like, oh, let's go. Like, I feel alive.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I can be, yeah, just the total opposite of just like in the dumps. This is awful.
Yeah.
This sucks.
But, and again, I think that whenever I feel like, man, I've just been feeling intense emotion after intense emotion after intense emotion, I'm like, I need a break.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a break.
Which makes me think, jumping back to the question of, like, day-to-day practicals, one thing I've heard before is because one's, like, and sorry, I'm, like, spider webbing.
That's okay.
But one's love the goodness and the perfection of God. Like, that's what is, like, usually, like, our most favorite character quality of God. Because it's just like, yes, if nothing else is perfect, God is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so, like, a way to, like, cope and vent, like, if you don't, if someone doesn't like exercising or whatever, being in nature, and I think it was being in nature and exercising were the two, like, recommendations of, like, if you're just, like, overwhelmed, life is crazy, obviously first be going to the Lord, but different practicals is, like, do your quiet time in nature, because nature, everything is as it, I mean, there's brokenness in nature, but, like, you know, if you watch a flower bud, like, that is how God created it. That's, like, perfect, you know?
Yeah.
And so just being in nature and being around God's creation is, like, a huge breath of fresh air for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about this, you know, a bit already, but how has learning about, like, your personality type through the Enneagram helped you just point you to Jesus, and what has it taught you about God, and how has it helped you along in your walk with him?
Yeah. So right off the bat, when I listened to the first podcast on the Frontier about the Enneagram, they went through how Jesus is not like, Jesus isn't a type 7. Jesus isn't a type 1. He is the best parts and the perfection of all of the types with none of the sinful parts.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, remembering that this is just a tool, this isn't the gospel, as a tool, it has shown me, just like, say I have a friend that is a 2 and is like, has a really, like, a servant's heart. When I see that in them, I'm like, wow, like, you're like that way because you're made in the image of a creator, and Jesus is like that. Like, he was a humble servant. And so I think for me, it points me closer to Jesus by, making more real the aspects and the characteristics of who our God really is. And I think personally as a 1, I can look at how Jesus was the perfection of being a reformer, and how he did get angry, but he didn't sin. Like, what? And like all of this stuff, points me to how I can be more of that with less of the sin, and not just use the excuse of like, oh, I'm a 1, so I get frustrated. It's like, no, like that's not just an excuse. Let's look at our Savior. Let's look at Jesus and be more like him and less of the sinful parts of us.
Yeah.
So I wrote a blog post about the Enneagram, I guess going 2.5 years ago. But the one thing that I had written that I got from the On the Frontier podcast, I'll just read through really quick. one of the really neat things that they brought up in the podcast that spoke to me was that Jesus is not one type on the Enneagram. He is the perfection of all nine types with none of the flaws. He is the most perfect reformer, which is the one. He's the humblest helper and servant, which is the two. He was driven in his goals and he achieved them. His ultimate, like, he never lost sight of the fact that he was here on earth was for the cross, was to be the atonement for our sins and defeat death. Like, he never lost sight of that goal. And that's what's really cool about our friends that are threes, that they set goals and they achieve them.
They keep them.
Like, I am so bad at that.
So true. Yeah.
But like, Jesus had, right from the beginning with his disciples, he knew why he was there and he did not get distracted from it.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. Because if he wasn't like that, none of us would be saved because he didn't accomplish the goal.
Yeah.
Number four, he is completely self-aware and unique. Because fours, they know themselves well, and they like to be different and unique. And Jesus, like, there was no one like Jesus ever. He has complete knowledge and understanding, which is the fives. They're thinkers, they ask questions, they learn, they grow. Number six, he is the most loyal and worthy of trust of all. Number seven, he is the source of all joy and is the most exciting person ever. Number eight, he is the ultimate leader and challenger. I love, like, Jesus was not afraid, because everyone always thinks Jesus, oh, just the
just
gentle.
Like to hold lambs.
I was just going to say that. I like to hold lambs and I'm soft-spoken and all that kind of stuff. But like, he was not afraid. I was just reading the story of the woman at the well this morning, and Jesus said, go get your husband. And she said, I don't have a husband. He's like, you're right. You had five and you're not with them, any of them right now. Like, he like was a challenger, but in so much gentleness and grace and truth and love, that like friends who are eights, like, they can learn from that of like, yes, be a challenger, but have so much grace and gentleness in that.
And he cared about justice.
Yeah.
He is justice. Yeah.
Number nine, lastly, so nines are the peacemakers, and the Bible says Jesus is the Prince of Peace.
Yeah.
And so just with all that, as followers of Jesus, he's making us more like himself daily, and we should resemble all of those qualities, although we're obviously broken by sin. But I think it's especially neat to look at Jesus as the perfection of each type. Each type can look to Jesus's perfect example and ask the Lord to increase the qualities of that type that are good and from him, and decrease the qualities that are a manifestation of sin.
I think one of my favorite things about God is that he is making us new. He is reforming us, because I think as a one, just, you know, having that personality type, which I do want to be sure to say this too, like, your personality type is not your identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Stacey said, the Enneagram is not the gospel. It's a tool that points us to the gospel and helps us understand ourselves a little bit better and understand God a little bit better, hopefully, too. But as someone who is constantly wanting to change myself or get better or be good, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't change myself. I can't be good by myself. Like, I am not perfect, and I can never be perfect in my own effort. But, you know, God is perfect, and not just that, but God credits Jesus's righteousness to me without me having to earn it. It's a gift. Like, perfection to me is a gift. Like, God is literally like, I know you want to be perfect, you can't be, but I'm giving you perfection as a gift, and I am making you new, and one day you will be perfect, and just like me, you'll be perfect, and we'll be together in all of our perfection, and it'll be great. And you won't have to be so serious all the time anymore, or, you know, always be guilty. Your guilt is taken away from you. I've taken on your guilt myself. Like, and that's, I think, one of the things I really need to focus on more about God is that. And one of the Enneagram people that I like to follow, her name is Beth McCord, and she talks about the Enneagram from a Christian perspective. And for each type, she kind of has, like, the gospel message that this type needs to hear. And for ones, it's that, you know, God has forgiven you, and you are completely forgiven, and you are credited Christ's righteousness. So perfection is credited to you. And when we accuse ourselves, or when Satan accuses us, like, God is there to say, yeah, that may be true of her, but I already took all of that on mm-hmm. myself. And she's no longer, like, in a courtroom, you know, in the court of law, like, I have judged that she is innocent yeah. and worthy of my love, not because she earned it or because she served enough time or whatever, but because I took on her punishment for her and I gave her my perfect performance. Mm-hmm. And that's what really can set you free. And I think about, speaking of Justin Ryder, who did the mm-hmm. On the Frontier podcast, there was I think it was a Leader Weekend where he was speaking and he was talking about, I always think about this, but have you ever seen 8 Mile, the movie about Eminem's
no.
life? Okay. So, well, yeah, it's a good movie, I would say. So in 8 Mile, it's the movie about Eminem, like the rapper's mm-hmm. life. Okay. And at the end of the movie, he's like in this final rap battle scene with like this guy, Papa Doc, who, who like he went against before, I think. And like, he just got crushed. Okay. And so it's like his second time going up against him, and Papa Doc goes first and he like says all these things about Eminem, like, you're white trash, like your mom is this and that, and like my friend slept with your mom and like whatever, like you're just garbage yeah. and like whatever. Anyway, and then Eminem goes and he literally like lists off all these things. He's like, yeah, I am white, I am a bum, my mom did sleep with so and so, like I am this, I am like, you know, white trash, I do live here, I am, you know, poor, whatever it is. Like, he just kind of owns all yeah. of it and like shoves it back in his face, like, what, like, you have nothing on me because I know, like, I know all of yeah. these things. And it reminds me of like being a one, in the sense that I always think about, like, I'm gonna punish myself before this other person has yeah. the chance to
yeah.
do it, like
yes.
I'm gonna make sure, you know, I know all the things that are yes. wrong with me before you can tell me, because yeah. I'd rather like punish myself than have you do it. But also, anyway, Justin Ryder was talking about the scene and he was like, this is like when we, you know, when we come face to face with God, Satan is going to be there and he's going to be like, listen, God, she did this. She yeah. slept with that person. She did this. She was mean to this, mm-hmm. you know, she broke this law, whatever it is. Like, she did all these things and against you, like she should not be allowed mm-hmm. to be in relationship with you or be in heaven. And then like, Jesus walks in and he's like, yeah, we know, like, she did do that, she yeah. did, she is like this yeah. she did say this about me, but like, you have nothing yeah. on her essentially yeah. because I have already like taken it all, like, I know
yeah,
like, she knows, I know, God, like,
my,
we all know,
is credited to
exactly
her. Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. I don't know yeah, I don't know, he just it blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, who knew? Every time I watch 8 Mile now, I'm like reminded of the gospel.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I true. Love 8 Mile now more than I did before. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always think about that when I'm like feeling really, being really hard on myself. I'm mm-hmm. like, but you know, it's, God already knows.
Yeah. That's so true.
So
I think that's something that, yeah, God has shown me as well, of like, I feel guilty about this, that, and that. And I try to just feel good and perfect of my own accord, but him just showing me like, no, you feel guilty because you are a broken sinner. Like, that is the reality. Like, you are. Like,
yeah.
Stop trying to pretend you're not, or making yourself feel good enough, or just to, yeah, balance out the scale. Like, you feel that way because you are a broken sinner. But my, like you said, like, the courtroom is adjourned. Jesus was judged on our account, and now we are seen as perfect in God's eyes because of Jesus. And so, like, just yeah, like you said, it's a gift. Like, God's, the perfection of Jesus was gifted to us. And so
yeah.
to simultaneously know that we are broken and the worst of sinners, and to simultaneously know, but we don't have to feel guilty because our righteousness comes from Jesus. Like, that is the gospel, and that is mind-blowing, and that's going to change the way that
we live. It's a game changer.
It's a game changer, yeah.
In his eyes, we are good.
Yeah. And we know that we're not good, but that's okay, like, because we're still good in his eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy.
I need that tattooed on my forehead.
Yeah. Seriously.
Awesome. Hey, anything else you want to share before we wrap up?
Not that I can think of.
So for some resources, the EnneagramInstitute.com. Beth McCord is your Enneagram coach. She definitely uses the Enneagram with a biblical perspective. She has some really good devotionals out there. Follow her on Instagram. There's free tests out there. If you don't want to pay for the official test, there's The Road Back to You, which is a book. I don't know who wrote that book, but The Road Back to You is a book, you know, that can help you find out your type. The Wisdom of the Enneagram is another book that's good. There's so many podcasts out there about the Enneagram.
Annie F. Downs has an Ennea Summer series.
Yep, Annie F. Downs has a good series on the Enneagram for sure.
Maybe you can put the link for the On the Frontier one.
On the Frontier, yeah, I'll link all of those things in the show notes. But we'll be back sometime with type two.
Yeah.
I'm gonna really try to commit to this series, guys, but I gotta find someone with each type. So
yeah.
I think I've got a two, I've got a three, maybe have a four. I don't know if he'd be willing to do it, but I need a five and
plenty of sixes.
I know plenty of sixes too. I think a lot of my friends are sixes. I need a five and possibly a four. So yeah. I mean, and if and any number you are, if you wanna share, let me know. But looking for those two specifically. So,
and I did think of one more thing. I know that we like said this a bunch throughout, but I again don't think it can be reiterated enough. Just that, like, because this is so popular and mainstream in the Christian world right now, like, it can be, and it's, I think more so with our personality than anything else, because we can get so obsessive over something to blow it out of proportion that it is neat and it's a good tool, but if it's not leaving you pointed to Jesus and like at the foot of the cross, then it's not good.
It's not helping you.
So like it is not the gospel. It is a tool, but whenever anything blows out of proportion as greater than the gospel, then it is hindering the gospel. To just keep it in perspective and know that ultimately you could throw this book out the window, never remember anything Enneagram, never even hear about the Enneagram, and if you know Jesus and have a relationship with him, like, that is all that matters. So just to keep it in perspective that this is literally nothing.
Yeah, and the best way to know yourself is to know Jesus.
Exactly.
The more you know Jesus, the more you will know yourself.
Yeah.
And your tendencies and your desires and your sin and all of it.
This if someone never hears about the Enneagram, it doesn't mean that they can't know themselves and know Jesus. Knowing Jesus is how you know yourself and Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Hey friends, hope you all enjoyed the show. Feel free to check out the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a review, leave a rating, subscribe so you don't miss anything. And I hope you will be back and join us in the future.